exceptionnel.
Sagosen. Sagosen setter det hen! Han setter den! De I semifinale igjen!
Here's a man who needs no introduction. It's Iceland's 40-year-old magician, Gudjon Valur Sigurdsson. Now, we sat down with him the day after Iceland's victory over Portugal, and we planned to talk a little bit about his role in the team, but when we sat down, we ended up talking on a different level, didn't we, Chris?
About everything else.
We don't talk too much about the games coming up, but we had, I'd say maybe my favorite interview.
Listeners, you decide for yourself. Let's go.
Thanks for sharing our video yesterday, actually, the video of the Icelandic clap. You shared it on your profile and we got a lot of views for it. But it was
interesting
to see the look on all your faces. I mean, that really meant something special for you, that result yesterday. And relief was the word that came to my mind.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. But, you know, we were disappointed after the games against Hungary and Slovenia. So we were just happy to get a win. And we know also that we are responsible for the atmosphere of our fans, and we get rewarded with a Viking clap if we play well. So it's maybe a cliche for many people who have seen it online or on TV, but for us it's a in the moment thing, and we see how our people and our fans react and how much fun they have with it. So it's fun for us.
You mentioned cliche then. I mean, some people have replicated in other sports and other nations, but having your own traveling fans come over as well, and that's a great supporting crowd. Like, they are so, we're surrounded by them in the media tribune, and they're so vocal and so passionate on their feet the entire time. That must give you something extra as well.
Of course. And that's why we feel extra bad when we don't perform, because some of them take some drinks before the match and they get vocal as well if we don't perform. No. But it's nice to have the support. And when you come from a small country and you know how much it means to the team and to the people in Iceland, and we joke about it that we have more than 300,000 national coaches, and it's after every game somebody has an opinion, and we have some really good experts on social media as well that have, after the game, they say that I've been saying this for 2 weeks. So that's in every nation, many nations like that. But by us it's extreme because how few we are. But it also shows that people don't care, and we take it as a positive, not a negative, when we get criticized, because it makes handball grow in Iceland, and it's possible for us to get sponsors and keep on evolving for the future.
Players and coaches, they often try to avoid the coverage back at home, and I guess for other nations it might be easier to do. Is it a case that because Iceland is so, I guess, small and in population, that it's almost impossible to avoid one way or another?
You decide yourself what you digest from the media. You know, I don't have to visit some pages if I don't want to, or if I know I played bad, I'm not thinking about, hopefully they have an excuse for me or they're going to rip me apart and I need it. It depends on what I want to do and how I go about it. But it's probably easier to find in Iceland because, you know, we have the members of the media here, and the Icelandic people, they are interested in us. So I mean it in no bad way. It's different between players, how they want to, if they need a boost, you know, if they play a good game, they want to read nice articles about themselves, it's good. Or if they play bad, then I advise them, just don't go online, because actually, if you don't read it, it's not even there. But some guys can handle it, and it's something that comes with time. You know, I know when I play bad and I'm pissed off at myself, and if somebody writes that I played bad, it's the truth, but they're criticizing me as the handball player me, not the father of three me, or the person me, because they maybe don't know me personally. That's They're writing about what we do, and they are in full right of doing so as well.
And is that something you've learned over the years? I mean, did you make mistakes in the past that you've gone to articles after bad games in red and it's made worse? Or has this been a mentality you've developed over time?
Of course, you get more used to it. But, you know, the thing is, for me now, I'm 40 years old. I maybe miss a penalty or miss a fast break. And I see that when you run back, it's probably the longest distance for a corner player after missing fast break, running back and looking at six guys and like clapping and say, it's okay, it's okay. And you're like, how big of a jerk am I? And they're trying to build you up and you hear the boos around you maybe, but it's, you don't want to let people down. And the more you play, the more you train, the better I should be. So at age 40, I shouldn't even be missing a shot, but I still make mistakes. But that's the fun thing about sport, you know. It's, you know, you don't get used to playing bad, and I get pissed off at myself when I do. But it's also rewarding being able to be part of a group like this, young group, with two guys who are younger than my oldest daughter and one the same age. So. I'm just taking it as it goes.
And did you imagine that you would be playing this long? When you look back, when you say you're 20, do you think I'm still going to be playing handball at 40?
No, that's not a goal. First I wanted to be a good player in Iceland, you know, first team player. And then I got the chance to play abroad in Germany. And then you want to play for as big and good club as you can get to. You want to be successful, but you along the way, you know, you want to win titles, you want to do good, you want to have a part and a role in a team, you want to that what you do, how you play, how you perform, that it matters to, you know, just not swimming along. And then you have always a person, and at some point you find out what you do, how long you want to play, what you want to do when you grow up. I still haven't found out what I want to do when I grow up. But at some point, I have to make that transition. But now I'm just happy to be here, and then I'm enjoying it.
You referred to two players in the team who are younger than your oldest daughter. And yeah. For you, at the age you are now and everything you've experienced, you mentioned there the helping or mentioning to players sometimes not to look at the news, you know. Do you find yourself actively pursuing a role of like advising these players, or do you let them come to you when they want advice?
It's both ways, you know, but it's, you know, I also see, you know, an 18, 19 year old guy, he doesn't walk up to the oldest guy, just say, hey, what about this? But when I see something, I try to advise him, but I'm also aware of that I'm not going every day with every situation and saying, do this, not that. They have to find out for themselves. And we are really strong about it, that every good thing that they do, they hear about it and they don't get criticized by every bad thing they do. And they're also not, they will get no blame if they do mistakes or if we lose. You know, that everything that they tribute, every good thing that they do is a plus for us, because they are still too young to be handling their responsibility. But they have also shown that they are, for us, they're one of the biggest talents that we have in European handball or in world handball at the moment. And for us, at this moment, having guys like that in Iceland, that's big, you know. We have, so we are now talking about Hallgrímsson, the goalkeeper, and Thrastason, the middle back. You know, they're both, you know, Aron Pálmason style of talent. And that we don't see often in Iceland, to tell the truth. So we are taking as good care of them as we can. And I hope that they will evolved into world-class players, but they still have a long way to go. It's not just having talent. It's a long road. You have to make smart, right decision where you play. You have to get lucky with injuries, of course. There's always a big factor in sport. So, but I'm cheering for them for the future. You know, the future is theirs.
Do you remember when you were their age? And was there any figure in the Icelandic national team that then they took you under their wing at that time and maybe give you some advice that you still remember to this day?
Yeah, but the times were a little bit different. When I played my first tournament in Croatia 2000. I was the youngest player with 20, and the second youngest player was, I think, 26. So we had an age gap of that was big, and the times was just were different. But we had, for example, the big three back then were Patrik Jóhannesson, who was the coach of Austria and now in Skjern, Dagur Sigurdsson, the coach of Japan and was in Germany and with Füchse Berlin, and Ólafur Stefánsson, of course. And they had, in my opinion, you know, in short, everything under control. And in year 2001, when I went to Tuusse Messen, it was Jóhannesson who was the captain of the team at that time. And he just called me and he said, "You're coming to Tuusse Messen next year." And I was, okay. But it was not like I had many offers or something. He just said, "Okay, you're coming here." And he was sort of my big brother. And when me and my wife and our daughter, when we moved there, he and his family and his wife, they took really good care of us and helped us with everything, adjusting to the professional life and you know, finding an apartment and everything like that. So, it's a tradition in Iceland, of course. You know, you have to help the younger guys, and we're a small country, and you always know a guy who knows a guy who has some contact with some national team player. So I would mention at least those three guys, but I was treated well. But I can remember how big the age gap was and how in awe I was at times, you know, with the older players. You know, Jóhannesson, for me, he was an old guy when I went out, but he was 29.
Yeah.
So times change.
Over those 20 years, a big part of these championships is the daily life, so off court as well and training. And
it's a groundhog day.
Yeah, exactly. Has it changed much for you over those 20 years?
Now, for example, we have a big room where both of our physiotherapists, they have where they do the treatments, and we have a PlayStation computer if the guys want to play NBA or FIFA. Or yesterday we watched Liverpool against Manchester United, then we watched NFL, the first game in NFL. And we put some videos up there, and it's like a some kind of center that we come, yeah, and... that has changed a little bit, but otherwise, you know, every player has to think about himself. Sometimes some guys want to lay down after lunch, some guys want to take a walk, so we are not together the whole day, but we also know if you go to the room, there's almost all the time somebody there. So it's with technology as well, it has changed.
It's easier to get distracted, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, I suppose it depends on how the games are going as well, the mood in the camp.
Of course.
You've been a part of numerous events now at this stage. How have you personally dealt with the ups and downs of events? And because there's a lot of psychology that goes into picking yourself up really quickly after a loss and putting it behind you, otherwise you'll drag it into the next game as well.
Yeah, as an athlete, you have to be aware of that, especially in team sports like handball or football as well. You know, if you play bad, you have usually a game in 2, 3, or 4 days' time. So you have, at some point, you have to pick yourself up because realizing that you're the only person responsible for your own performance. You know, it's not about the referees did that, the ball did that, or the coach is not giving me the role that I want to play, you know. We are responsible for our own actions. So when you realize that, it gets easier to prepare for the next game. You know, if you're always the victim, you know, you will never pick yourself up. So getting rid of the victim role and taking responsibility, you know that you still have games to play. You know, it's with the hotel life, you can say, okay, the food is like that. We're always in the same room. But it's your responsibility that you're here. You took a decision. Stay at home if you don't like it. it sounds harsh, but it's like it. But it's of course, we get days. I have my down days and down moments, of course. But when you get older, at least, you get more thankful for the opportunity. For me, it was just... I was part of a team because I was good. I was playing good. I deserve to be here. At this moment, I think I'm still good enough. At least the coach respects it. But I'm also aware of it should be, or sport is usually a young man's game. You know, so if he would like to, some people say he should be thinking about the future, taking younger guys, and I respect that as well. So that's fuel for me to prove that I still can play with the best. But being thankful and respecting the opportunity that I have and enjoying the time with the guys is big part of this for me being here at this moment, because it won't last forever. I know that now.
If I'm not mistaken, you have some family here as well.
Yes.
I guess one of the huge benefits of your elongated career is that you have children now who have grown up and are experiencing you playing still at the highest level. And is that something that you bear in mind as well, knowing that you will have these championships and these moments to look back on with your young son?
Then it would be like me for being at my own funeral, reading my, you know, how do you call it, what the priest reads?
The obituary.
The obituary, yeah. You know, this is what your father did. Yeah. And he can still ask, you're still here. Yeah. What the fuck are you doing now? Sorry. You know, so it's, you know, I enjoy seeing him enjoying himself. But also when I miss a shot, he told me when we lost against Hungary, he was like, you lost today. You missed this many shots. And I was waiting for, but it's okay. He said, last year he came to me and said, I think I scored a goal in a game, 9 or 10 goals with Rane Gallöven. And he came to me, what were you thinking with this penalty weight you missed? Ah. So he constantly reminds me of what I'm doing wrong. But, you know, my wife and son are here. My two daughters are coming tomorrow. So it's great having them and you know, showing interest in what I have. And it also reminds me a little bit that, you know, as a father, we have been moved around a lot. You know, you constantly question yourself when you see the kids moving around away from the friends to next place. And they're always following you. They're always coming with me because of I'm doing this. At some point, I have to settle down, find something for the future. So I will maybe follow them around if they will still have me. Yeah, but it's you know, I'm not doing it for the trophies or for the you know, the CV or something. It's just I'm fortunate enough being able to have fun. You know, I'm doing my hobby. I dress in sportswear and run after a ball. And I told it in Iceland some days ago, who else does that? It's a dog. When the dog's happiest, when he's doing something that he likes. So, you know, I'm fortunate not being able to do that at the age of 40.
Would you like to return to Iceland when you finish playing?
It's a good possibility, yeah. But I still don't know if I... how long I will play, you know. I have this year in Paris, and we finish the season there. What comes after that, we don't know. We just keep all the doors open, and then we see if some club needs a left corner player at the end of the season. If not, I don't know. We wait and see what happens.
Day by day.
Day by day.
I have a good feeling there'll be a few teams that want you. I don't think that's an issue.
Yeah, I don't know. We wait and see.
Thank you so much for your time. That was really good.
Thank you, guys.
Pleasure.
Croatia are the first team in the semi-final of the EHF Euro 2020. Despite 57 minutes of dream performance from Germany. Almost there. Probably the game of the tournament. Game of the tournament for Germany. But why wasn't it enough for them?
As you said, it was definitely their by far their best game. And players like Philipp Weber had an absolutely incredible performance for parts of the game. But when push came to shove in the really tense parts of the match towards the end, it looked like there were certain players in the backcourt who didn't want to step up and take responsibility for taking the shot. I think there was one stage, we were saying it when we were watching it, it's like they were trying to, it was like a hot potato in the backcourt. They were passing it around to each other. Nobody wanted to take the shot. And suddenly someone like Julius Kühn, who was not on his best form, he had, I think, 1 from 5, was it?
Yeah, 20%.
Julius Kühn would be disappointed with that performance. But the other players like Tobias Reichmann, 4 from 4, 100%. He was decent.
I think it just showed the difference between the two teams in the end. You know, Germany don't have a backcourt that can operate when it matters most at that level. And Croatia have four really, really good players in that backcourt. Yeah. You know, Igor Karacic banged in 7 goals, 5 for Duvnjak. There was Lukas Hindrić as well. Not so great, but he scored 3 goals. And, you know, he, if I'm not mistaken, won a few penalties as well and was pretty dangerous towards the end. And Lukas Stepančić, who was 4 from 6. So it's just another level in the backcourt.
It's clearly the backcourt. Yeah. If you look at the German wings, Uwe Gensheimer, 4 from 4 from the wing. Timo Kastening, 4 from 4 from the wing. Tobias Reichmann, 4 from 4 penalties. They nearly have it. And then at the end, you mentioned it, Prokop had to take a timeout because no one wanted to take that shot in the last couple of minutes. But really, it all came down to the 57 minute, 24 Germany, 23 Croatia. Duvnjak with a steal to seal the game, to basically collapse Germany's hopes. I think there's no coming back for them after that.
Shout out to Martin Šego as well. I mean,
had a terrible game.
Terrible game, but it's that classic goalkeeper thing. You can have a terrible game and all of a sudden you pull off a save that makes up for everything.
Yeah, it's just, you know, 5 saves overall from Croatia in that game. 16% from Šego. And in comparison, Andy Wolf for Germany had a stormer. You know, he was 13 saves for him, 34%. But at the end of the day, it's, well, Germany still have a chance. We won't go into too many details about that. But Croatia, the first side through to the semi-final. And in the other group, we could have 5 teams ending up on 6 points. It has all gone insane in Malmö, or it continues to be insane in Malmö, after we had Iceland beat Portugal earlier on Sunday by 3 goals. We had Hungary beat Slovenia in the battle of the 2 most recent podcasts, Laszlo Nagy in Hungary against Ljubo Vranjes and Slovenia. Hungary came out on top there. And then we had the Scandinavian battle, which was the match of the day on Sunday evening in Malmö. And in the end, a low-scoring affair, but really, really intriguing game. Could feel the nerves throughout the 60 minutes. What did you think of it, Alex?
Well, I was surprised by the low-scoring game and quite a slow game, actually. Almost every attack in the second half, I'd say 60% of the attacks, went to a referee with a hand up. And with the way Norway have been playing, they, you know, fast. That's how you do it. And Sweden tend to play like that all the time. And I'm not sure if it was just nerves or, I don't know if it was nerves, but there was a bit of caginess in the game where Norway couldn't quite pull away. And again, it came down to a last minute save from Bergerud, who had an incredible game. And we've talked about him as a key man for Norway. Is he going to keep that up, do you think, Brian?
When we had that, I think it was the 3rd or 4th podcast we had with the 2 Norwegian commentators, and it was a comment that Chris made that he's known for sort of performing 50% of the time.
Oh, not even.
Not even sometimes.
40%, I think.
40%
of the time. 2 out of 5.
2 out of 5, yeah. He also, for Norway, he does come up with the goods a lot, you know. On club level, he's a lot. I think he's a bit more hit and miss. But he looks like the best goalkeeper on the planet right now with some of those performances. And
he does it with a smile.
He does it with a smile, yeah. He'll get hit in the face and he'll be smiling his head off. But he's very... I don't know if it's maybe the Sagerson bug in the squad or something, but he seems to be really enjoying himself. And I think there are certain handball players out there that when they're enjoying themselves, they can be really dangerous. Sagerson is one of them, and he's also one of them. And he's really loving this whole, well, it's not, they're not hosts anymore, but they were hosts, Scandinavian host role that they have. And but there was a stage in the game today when Lukas Pelles was taking the penalties. And I think he scored one with a broken wrist, and the whole place was, oh. And then he scored one other one. I remember this correctly now. I think it was the 3rd penalty he took. And Bergerud had a big smile on his face as he was walking up. And he's like, I'm going to get him this time. And he did. And he saved it. It was like a game for him. And he's really enjoying it. So when you look at that, you think he's not going to flop under the pressure. He's loving this. He's loving the pressure here. He's really lapping it up.
He is. And he got 3 out of 5 saves for penalties today.
Yeah.
Those two we mentioned from Palace were the only ones he conceded. And you made a very good point about him performing for club on and off, hit and miss. But for country, he is very, very good most of the time. And there was, as you said, the big question in the beginning of this championship, whether he could produce over and over again. And you, before we started recording, you mentioned 2017 when they made their first run to a world final. And he seems in similar form here. And it's a really dangerous thing. And Norway still looked like they're the best team. They had a very different game today, like Alex said. They weren't as fast as usual. Alex asked me right before the start, will they slow it down today? And Alex saw something that I didn't see anyway, and they did it. Maybe it was more a preventative measure then, in that case, to stop Sweden from beating them on the break.
Especially getting those interceptions. They got 3 fast break interceptions, running full speed, turn around, catch the ball. It's beautiful.
Real trouble with Sweden in the backcourt today again. That was the big deal. I mean, looking at the scores here, all the players who scored more than 2 goals were wingers. And Kim Ekdal-Duryea, 2 from 8. Lucas Nielsen was on for 20 minutes before he took his first shot and his only shot, and that didn't go in. So real trouble for them. It looked a lot better. Albin Lagergren had a good game, started the game, and he scored a couple of goals. He earned a penalty or two, had a few more assists, and just made it look a bit more balanced. But in the end, it was not enough.
Do you think Norway slowed it down? Was there something conscious?
I thought before a game that they might slow it down, because Sweden do thrive on the second wave fast breaks. And this, if there's a risk that if they ran out the same as they did against Hungary and tried to steamroll them, they would almost be steamrolled back. But the defences were very good on both sides. I was actually quite impressed with Sweden's performance overall. You know, I said they had their neck on the block. They needed an extra gear. And I think they found a gear, but probably needed just a couple more gears to get past this Norway team.
They missed some huge chances. 3 penalties there. They had a few glorious opportunities towards the end, which, and some of them were unfortunate. There was one that was a shot from the back or was blocked down. Andy Nielsen then picked up the rebound, and somehow Bergerud got back up on his feet and made an incredible save. Seconds later then, Gottfriedsen broke through on the right-hand side, smacked it off the crossbar, and that was kind of like, all right, it's not going to be their day today. But someone who we've barely mentioned, probably for the first time when talking about Norway, is Sander Sagosen. He had another great game today. He wasn't as efficient in shooting, but he banged in the goals when they were needed most. How many did he get? 8 goals again today. Top scorer of the competition. And Brian had a chance to chat to him right after the game.
Was there anything that particularly surprised you about today's game?
No, we were prepared for the game. We know it will always be tough against Sweden. They have a really good defense with really good goalkeepers. We have problem making goals. We make only 23 today, but it's really, I'm really happy and really confident to show that we show up with this class in our defense with our goalkeeper today. It was outstanding. So 20 goal against Sweden is a good performance.
Yeah, and you scored 8. Did you know that your third goal was your 100 euro goal?
Oh, that's nice. I'm starting to get a little bit old now, so I have to get some goals now.
Do those milestones mean much to you?
No, I'm reaching for the medals. That's what I'm playing for, and that's what this group is reaching for. We are one team, and we work every day to accomplish new stuff, and it's funny to be a part of this team.
And how long do you think it would take you before you score your next 100?
Hopefully 1 or 2 championship. Let's see. I'm just enjoying to play at the moment and enjoying to have fun out there and on the field. And I think everybody can see that.
How does it feel to be playing in Sweden?
Oh, it's funny. I love to be playing the big games, playing against good opponents and good friends. It's hard to be away. We had a wonderful time in Trondheim, and the first game against Hungary, I think the spectator was a little bit on our side, but today was for sure Sweden's side. But this is the way of our sport, and I'm loving it to play these kind of big games.
You had a small amount of fans there today, but they were quite vocal.
Yeah, the Norwegian, you can never stop them, you know. So I'm happy to get as many as possible here to help us reach our goal and continue our work.
A 100 goals at the age of 24, many, many more to come easily. and he has an opportunity to become the highest ever scorer in a European Championship. Title currently held by Kirill Lazarov with 61 goals in the Championship. Sagason on 42 with 4 games to play. Obviously, Lazarov did his own thing and did it in 7 games because that's what he does. But Sagason is just so much more than a goal machine. I actually found it quite deceptive that he is the top scorer because it's almost like he's looking for the assist more than the goal. But then he's the man who takes the ball when they need him.
He's also the best shooter. He just also likes to make passes, you know?
Highest jumper, strongest shot.
Decent defender.
Yeah. He is the full package, right? And as you said, he offers so much more. Lazarov was, I think, forced to shoot as much as he still does with North Macedonia. But I'd like to see how many assists he got at this championship. Something we can look up at. I say if you combine assists and goals by the end of this championship for Sagason and that championship for Lazarov when he got 61 goals, I'd say Sagason comes out on top on average again. So Sagason will have played 9 games. Should Norway get to the final weekend? So should they get to the semi-final, it'll be 9 games for him. So he's got 4 more matches to get 19 goals at least. I have a funny feeling he'll do that.
Well, he also, if we want to keep it equal, he has 2 games to reach 19 goals in that time. So I think even that's possible.
I wouldn't put it past them, yeah.
Or will Norway start to kind of lower him down? Okay, they're not qualified yet. There's a lot that can happen in the group. But will they start staggering his minutes a little bit? But who do they have? They lost Magnus Rud today. He didn't play. It looked like an ankle injury. He was okay.
He came back on.
And then he came off straight away.
I think he'll be okay, but yeah, he not at 100%.
Just a bit of a broader question here. Like when Sander came to this tournament, he was up there as one of the best guys on the planet. Is he now definitively the best guy on the planet after a few handful of performances? Because I feel like his stock has really gone up again, and it's like he's really has etched his name into the placard of the greatest at the moment.
I think he was among the greatest players at the moment. Mm. Right? I would say, I mean, this could end really badly for me. If I'm going to pick a top 5, like off the top of my head, it's Hansen, Karabatic, Sagason, Sindrich, and Dovniak.
Yeah.
Maybe like playing right now, all very similar position players, but you know that.
As guys who can control a team that are going to drive the team forward, they're.
Answers on a postcard, please, to the Scandic Trianglen in Malmo before we leave on Thursday. But I think what Mikkel Hansen did last year at the World Championship put him to a whole other stratosphere, but only in attack. And the defensive display of Sander Sagason as well, the fact that he is involved in everything, you know, and the fact that he, as the Norwegian guys we spoke to a few days ago, Daniel Hoglund and Christian Schelling, said, he's the poster boy and he loves it. He's doing everything in his power. He's speaking to as much media as possible. The only reason we can get him on for 2 minutes for a post-match interview is because he does 16 or 17 after the end of the game. There's no way we're going to get him on for 15 minutes because he is opening himself so much to everybody who wants a bit of Sander. So I think he's a really smart person in brand building, and in terms of the actual on-court performances, he's backing it up big time.
One of the, not complaints, but some people who were on Twitter after we picked the team of the decade, and they were saying that you should always consider the role that certain players have in defence as well. Mm. And players like Lazarov, players like Hansen to a certain degree. I mean, Hansen plays defence sometimes, but he's always just put out in the wing. You never see him playing centre block or anything like that. But there are total handball players, and that's Sagason is the definition of a total handball player. Very much like Karabatic as well. They can do everything. Dovniak, to the same extent.
But his swagger right now is unparalleled. And I think all of that we've talked about, his stock, the way he's playing, you can just, if you watch him walk off and on the court, he knows he is the show right now. He literally has a swagger. He's turning his shoulders with every step. The confidence emanates from him. And if I was his teammate, how does that not drive you forward? Where you know this guy is the top guy in this tournament. And you know you can give him the ball and he'll put it away.
He has to win the championship first. Let's win the championship first. It's early days. Early days. Yeah.
Officially.
I don't think he has his matched Hansen last year. I don't think we can forget exactly what level Hansen reached last year.
But he's getting there.
He's en route.
He's very much en route.
There are two rounds left in the main round and still a lot to play for. In Vienna, we still have three teams in the race for the second semi-final spot. Croatia are in there. Spain are in pole position to join them, but we also have a chance for Belarus and Germany. While over here in Malmö in Group 2, there are five teams that could still finish on the same amount of points by the end of Wednesday's final round. That probably won't happen, but you never know the way this group is going. So a lot more to look forward to over the next 2 days, and we'll be back with you on Wednesday just before the final set of matches in the main round. But until then, as we say in Irish, Alex...
Pug my horn. Alex, don't be saying that.
Slán go bhfuil. You got it wrong, Brian.